We're taking these separate, right?
Correct.
Okay, 3.1A waiver application to reopen TK 5 through 5 classes.
Okay, so what the board is looking at tonight is the waiver application to reopen our TK through 5. We would submit the waiver, assuming the board approves tonight, we'll submit the waiver tomorrow. It's typically about a 2-week turnaround, but it could be a little less and it could be a little longer. I say that with the understanding that there is a very good likelihood that starting Monday, we will move from the purple tier to the red tier. And if we move from the purple tier to the red tier for 2 weeks, then we will not need a waiver to reopen. We can reopen all grade levels, including the high school can reopen in the red tier. So if we went on, if we go into the red tier on Monday and we stay on it for 2 weeks, potentially we can start school in every school district, or yeah, every school district and school in Yuba County could start on October 19th. However, we are still going to submit the waiver, even though we probably won't need it. We're going to submit it just to be on the safe side, that in case something happens and we either stay in purple next week or we move back to purple in the 2 weeks, that we still have the waiver in place to be able to bring back TK through 5. So I went through the waiver pretty significantly at the last meeting. I don't know if the board wants me to go through it again, or if we want to look for questions from the audience about the waiver, whatever you would like. If we want to put it up on the screen for people to see, we can do that as well. You want to zip through it on the screen quickly?
I think you've gone through it, but if you want to zip through it,
okay, so Chad, if you could share, and then I'm going to ask Peter or Jody, let us, can you see it when it comes up, please?
Which one are we doing? The waiver application?
Yeah. Why is it blue?
Dr. Liu's letters, full screen.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, we got it.
All right, so we're gonna zip through this, and then at the end of this presentation, then we will ask for any questions. We would prefer you ask your question, but if you can't do that, you can put it in the chat, and then we'll move to the reopening plan at next. So the first, I'm not gonna read the letter. The first page of the waiver is a letter explaining to Dr. Liu that we are looking to apply for 4 sites, TK through 5th grade, even though 6th grade is part of the waiver process. We're excluding 6th because of the middle school concept. So moving to page 2. So I submitted the waiver to our county office after the last board meeting. That is the process which we have to follow. I had a meeting with them on Monday to discuss our waiver and see if they had any specific questions about our waiver. I did fill in a couple of things I'll call your attention to. They thought we should put the schedule in there that we were looking to follow. So I've added that at a page. You'll see that in a minute. And they suggested, at that point, I hadn't had any dates yet for our consult meetings with each of our labor groups. And so I've added that in there. So this is a letter from Dr. Ravelis at the county office saying that in their estimation, our application meets all of the areas that they are requiring in an application. So moving to the next page. So one of the things that that Dr. Liu is asking for, not necessarily, you can have somebody who needs to be admitted. So what the law says is we have to consult with our labor groups and with our parent groups. We have to, you know, make this plan available through board meetings, site council, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things that Dr. Liu is asking that no other county is asking is a letter of support from each of our labor units. So that's what you'll see the next few pages. This is from CSEA. And then next page is from the secretaries group. Next page is from the administrative group. Next page is from the confidential group. And then we move on to the actual waiver portion. So in the waiver portion, I went through this before, but you have to check the boxes. So we are looking at a traditional public school and a charter school, because we're looking at Wheatland Charter Academy. We put the numbers in there at the time. So currently our enrollment at the time of filling this out was 1,285. And then the numbers that we're looking at are on the same page for each of the grade levels. And you can see at sixth grade, we have zero because they're not included. And then moving down, I have to sign it, date it. Then you list all the groups that you consulted with. When did you consult with them? So they're listed, the parent community, other districts within Yuba County, our SELPA, et cetera, et cetera. So those are listed. And then moving down, all these check boxes is what we have to write to. So they will be the next number of pages. So if you can just keep scrolling, I'll tell you when to stop. Okay, so starting on this page, basically I'm answering the questions again from the face page of when did we consult and all of that. I just felt it was necessary to add in there on the actual waiver application itself, so you can move down. That's just a repeat of what was above. And then these are the areas in which we had to write to. So cleaning and disinfecting. And so what are the custodial staff doing? And then I put in there about our HVAC systems, getting the upgrade with the GPS bipolar ionization filtration, which they have started the cleaning process of our HVACs, and they will be bringing in the system itself to each of the individual HVACs units. We're starting at Bear River, moving to Wheatland-L, and then going out to Lone Tree. All right, so then moving on, it's still all of part one, which was the cleaning, et cetera. And then part two we had to write to is cohorting. So how are we going to keep the kids together? So in our plan, we are going to have, we would have an AM PM program, and that the students would be either put on AM or PM. So a class of normally 24 would have 12 or so that come in the morning and 12 or so that come in the afternoon for 3 hours apiece. The places where cohorting are going to be difficult, if not impossible, is transportation. So if a parent chooses to put their child on the bus, they will be required to wear a mask the entire time, and the parent will need to understand that they will not be 6 feet apart. We will drive the buses with the windows open, pending rain or anything like that. The rest of, if it's cold, we're still going to drive it with it open. If it's hot, we'll still drive with the windows open. That was the recommendation from the health department. And then special ed students will travel out of their regular cohort into special ed and back into their cohort. But it'd be one or two students in a particular classroom. So that is the cohorting. And then we write about the entrance and egress into and out of the school. And then, you know, and that is just basically saying that our students are going to arrive on campus and go directly to the classroom. Parents are not to drop their children off at some ungodly hour of 6:30 or something like that. They need to drop them off. If school starts at 8, they should not be there before 8:15 to drop them off. Our buses will arrive. Walkers and bike riders, they all need to walk directly to their classrooms and not go into the multi-purpose room or go out on the playground or any of that would intermix kids. Now we know kids are kids, and different cohorts of kids are going to be walking down the street together to come to school. And we're asking that parents make sure that their children are wearing their masks and trying to social distance on their walk. Moving on to face coverings. There's a lot of questions about face coverings. Face coverings in the eye of the guidelines as of today is a cloth mask. It is not a face shield. It is required for all adults and required for third through fifth, but in the guidelines, third grade and above, all have to wear a mask anytime they're inside, even behind the desk partitions, is the current guidelines. They are looking at potentially changing some of that down the road, but right now that is the case. A teacher can wear a face shield with their mask hanging around their neck while they're teaching, as long as they can maintain over 6 feet away from the students. The instant a student calls for them to come over, they have to put their mask on before they can move over to where the teacher is. The face shield is a good idea for teachers to use when they're teaching, because that way students get to see their mouth, can hear them better, and so on and so forth, but they have to be 6 feet away or further. All staff and all should be wearing masks whenever they are inside. Now, our custodians, if they're out cleaning the playground and they're out there by themselves, they certainly do not need to have their mask on, but as they're walking through the hallways and whatnot, they should. So the only exceptions to this is TK through second grade. It is not required that a student wear a mask. It is highly recommended, but it will be left up to the parent to decide that. Third grade and above, there is no parental ability to say, my kid's not wearing a mask. They must wear a mask. That is what the guidelines say. And if they refuse to wear a mask, they will be asked, well, they will be sent home. In TK through second grade, we will ask that they wear a mask, but we will not require, and there'll be no discipline if they do not wear a mask. The only other option for no masks is with a doctor's note, and you would have to go to your pediatrician or your doctor to indicate that they cannot wear a mask. I think that's about it for masks. Then we talk about health screenings for students and staff, and what happens if a student has symptoms. We are doing passive screenings, which passive screenings means that we expect our parents to check their children in the morning, preferably take their temperature, check for symptoms, and not send their kids to school if they're ill. The same thing with staff. They will check their own symptoms at home, and they will determine whether they have a temperature or not. And then parents will be instructed to keep their kids home if they have any signs. And again, I'm not going to read it all. Bus drivers will have touchless thermometers to check the temperatures of students as they enter the bus. What they do is they run their hand over or under the touchless thermometer, and it'll indicate whether they have a temperature or not. No student will be left on the side of the road, even if they have a temperature. So if a student has 100.4 or above, then they will be put into a special area of the bus. When they brought to school, the school will be contacted, and somebody will come out, pick up the child, and take them into the office isolation room, in which time we will do another temperature. And if they still have a temperature, then we will contact the parent to come pick up. Then we just talk about healthy hygiene practices. I'm not going to go through all that. I can just say, wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands. Then identifying and tracing contacts. We have three trained contact tracers. They are our nurse, our health aide at Lone Tree, and our health aide at Wheatland-L. If a student or a staff member have COVID, they will then trace to see who that individual has been around and make contact accordingly. You will not get the name from us. However, if you are somebody who's been in close contact, we will have to indicate who it is. But we're not going to be sending out, hey, Johnny got sick today at school, to all parents in the district. That is not going to happen. We will work with those students who has the COVID infection has been in close contact with. And as a reminder, a close contact is within 6 feet of an individual for 15 or more minutes without a mask. So that's what's considered a close contact. If you have been in contact with the student or the staff member, but you have not been in close contact, then you will likely receive a generic letter saying that your child or the teacher has been in contact with a individual who has COVID, but it has been determined that you are not at risk because you are not a close contact. So that's kind of how the county's having us do it at the moment. And it too shall change, I'm sure. But at this point, that's what we do. And then it just goes on. Just know that we'll be working with the health department clearly if we have any cases of COVID-19 happening at our sites. Talks about quarantining for 14 days. If you get tested and you're positive, then it's a 10-day period. But if you don't get tested or if you are showing symptoms, it's 14 days. So it talks about that in the waiver. Moving on down, we talk about physical distancing. So again, the 6 feet, and that's why we're cohorting to keep kids apart. Students will be in their own desks. They will not be sharing desks at the TK5 level. At the 6-8 level, they could potentially be sharing desks. So we have bought the backpack ionizer sprayers that for each custodian in each bus to clean in between areas. They spray on and they kill, I guess what you would say, 99.9% of all infection, and they do not have to be wiped off. Now, of course, we will check that to make sure that they don't take 22 minutes to dry, but typically what we're being told is because that ionizer makes such small droplets that they dry within a few minutes. So those came in yesterday, so they will be out to the sites soon. Moving on, we talked a lot about physical distancing. Then we talked about staff training and family education. And then keep moving on, we talk about testing of students. So if a child has symptoms and is sent home, we will highly recommend that they get tested. There is free testing through the county, and we would expect that the student and or the staff member that is showing symptoms go get tested. So that's what this talks about in this section. And then that at one point in here, they talked about periodic testing. And currently there is no testing available for this surveillance testing. But when it does come out, then we will be required to do surveillance testing. And that's just basically random testing of individuals, not random, but every 2 months, every teacher has to get, or every staff member has to get tested. It is cost prohibitive because we are being told that it will be over $200 per test. And so it will run somewhere in the neighborhood of $10,000 to $15,000 a month for us to provide that testing, that surveillance testing, which of course the state or the feds have not given us any money for. So we will see how that all plays out if and when that test surveillance testing becomes available. My guess is a vaccine will be available before the surveillance testing. And then what are the triggers to move back to distance learning? Basically 25% of a school site or 25% of your district has to test positive for COVID. And then you have to go back to distance learning for a minimum of 14 days, and then you can come back. So it is a significant hurdle to have to go back to distance learning. We would have to have a very large percentage of our staff and students testing for COVID. In a positive result to have to switch back to distance learning. And then we just have to talk about the communication plan, and then what is our website and where is our reopening plan located on our website. And so that is at the bottom. So that is the waiver. Then moving on, other things that I've added. So this is assuming the board approves The next item, this would be the item that would be inserted, which is what is the plan for bringing students back? And we'll talk more about that plan at the next item, the next agenda item. So scrolling up more, no, wrong way. Oh, so, and then this is still part of it. We still will have home-based independent study program available for students who whose parents choose to not bring them back, assuming that we have space available. We currently have 90 spots in there that are all taken, but we do believe that a number of the students that are on home base will jump back into regular, into school, and that will open up spots. So we will start a list of those people who choose not to come back in any fashion. I talk about our preschool has been open since we began school on the 31st from 8:30 to 11:30, and they continue to be open. And then what does the timeline look like? The 31st was our first day of school. I will be submitting the waiver pending board approval tomorrow. Our anticipated start date under the waiver would be October 19th. Because of the plan, the first day, October 19th, would be a distance learning day, and I'll explain that a little further as in the next group of, or the next agenda item. And then our anticipated first day back into our AMPM model, assuming the board approves, is October 20th. And then the first day back under this waiver for 6 through 8 is to be determined. And that's all determined on the purple, red, orange, yellow. And then I just put in there, our district calendar is available to talk about holidays and specific dates. And then the rest of this is just the survey results. So I'm not going to spend any time on this because I spent a lot of time on the survey results. So you can see that is, how does it break out for just teachers? And then the next page is the survey, how many liked the AMPM and how many didn't. And then the next one is how many liked. Now understand they can vote for both. So they could like both, they could dislike both, but there's the other one, 40% for A, B, and 60% did not prefer that model. And then a graph on who answered the questions. And then we move on to the parent survey. And I went through, so the one that I reported on last time was not complete because the survey was still open. So this is complete. I redid this one after 5 o'clock on Sunday. And you can see that for parent, the ones that percent-wise that preferred the AMPM were 77 to 23. The AB was 36 to 64. And then if you look at, I'm not going to read all these numbers, but you can look by grade level, how many of those answering preferred the AMPM to the AB. And again, they can answer. We don't have that many students in a TKK, but parents could answer yes to both, or they can answer no, yes, no. So the numbers don't jive because they have to answer both questions in the survey. They are required questions. Currently, there are about 101 students that indicated they would want to stay on some sort of distance learning, home-based instruction. Like I said, we have 90 slots. If we really had 101, we could potentially buy 10 more slots, but they are not cheap. And so we would want to do that with the understanding that they're staying on that until at least the end of December.
Craig, quick question on the parent survey. Did you have a lot of comments that they had? I was just curious.
Yeah, there is a lot of comments. Most of them are just reiterating, I like this, I want my kids back in school, I don't care what it is. We have some that said, I want the AMPM, but I want AM. I don't know that I saw any that said, I want the AMPM, I want PM, but there might've been some in there. There were those kinds of comments. But I could print out all the comments, but it's probably about...
No, that's okay. I was just wondering if there was a lot of comments made by parents and that. I definitely didn't expect you to front them all.
Yeah, the majority of the comments that I will tell you in the pause, I can't remember very many negative comments from the parents. I did read all of them, but the majority of the comments were really, we want our kids back in school in some fashion. And so I will say that's the majority of what I saw in there. And then again, this is just the breakout by group, and we don't have to go through this, just scroll all the way to the end. I'll go back one. So this was interesting on this number four. We asked, yeah, there you go, right there. We asked about, you know, is it important to have your children on the same, if you have a child in middle school and at elementary, is it important that they're on the same schedule, or is it not important? And then the what I wanted to call your attention to here, when people are thinking about transportation, so of the 701 people that responded to the survey, 471 of them are planning on transporting their own children. So the buses may not be as crowded as they are in a normal atmosphere. So roll school, and I think that's pretty much it. Yeah, and then that just breaks it out by grade level. So that is the waiver application to indicate that our district would pursue the waiver while we're in purple. And again, I'll reiterate for those people who came on late, it is very likely that Yuba County and potentially Sutter County, but very likely that Yuba County for sure will be moving from purple to red on Monday, which then the waiver is no longer required because we can bring students back 2 weeks after they've been, after we've been on red for 2 weeks. And so that would be October 19th, assuming we go on Monday. But I still believe we should apply for the waiver just in case during that 2 weeks something happens, there's an influx of positive cases, then we have the waiver available to be approved. Plus, I've spent a lot of time on it. I just want to send it.
Well, I was going to say, even if we don't approve it tonight, because, you know, I'm not going to speak for anybody, but this is a huge amount of work and so well done with the parent survey and the teacher survey and all the comments and all the hard work. I just wanted to say thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. It's not a one-man show. I've had a lot of input from our staff. The administrators have been fantastic helping get through this. Teachers have been vocal about what they believe, and we've heard from parents. We've heard from classified staff members. So across the board, it's been a joint effort to try and get this waiver put together. So. With that, I'm going to open it up to any questions the board may have of me about the waiver. If there's any questions that others have, we can check the chat, or you can, I don't really know how else other than the chat to do it, because otherwise people are talking on top of each other. But if the board has any questions, you guys have seen this.
Yeah,
you've read through it for now a couple of weeks. But I'm happy to answer any questions. Rana, I know you're on Zoom. If you have a question, you can raise your hand or something and we'll, but otherwise I'll go to the chat to see if there's any questions about the waiver. And if not, then it'll go back to the board to approve or not approve. So can we only open in a hybrid model once we are in the red tier? Yes. So the hybrid has to stay. My understanding, and I'll have to double check because this question was asked earlier, that when we move to the orange, we can move to a less evasive kind of a system. It may be that we can move to orange, bringing them all back, but they still have to wear masks and all that. When we get to yellow, that's when it's back to some normalcy. So during the red tier, my reading of the guidelines is yes, we have to stay on a hybrid. Now, we did talk about this last week, that Western Placer is not staying on a hybrid. they are bringing their students back on a minimum day. But they also have a distance learning school available. So the kids can sign up for that. The teachers will do regular teaching from, I think it's 8 to 12:30, something like that. And then they will do distance learning. So it could be that their classes are still small. They're just there 5 days a week. I don't know. I haven't talked to them. Let's see. Thanks for all the information. Helpful. I have 2 students. Can any TK student who chose not to enroll in school in August enroll once the hybrid opens? Yes. So I would expect we will get students enrolling. It will not be a problem at the TK through 5. It could potentially be an issue at 6 through 8 because of their scheduling. We will not accept any inter-district transfers at this point, but if you live in our area and you decided, especially TKers, they decided to stay in preschool and now they want to come in, yes, they can enroll. We would want that to happen relatively quickly, just so that we got them in the right class on the right cohort. Can busing be provided for one way only, like only school, only to school, or only home? So I have found in my way too many years in this business that if you do not provide transportation, we have a lot of students that will not come because they don't have an option to get to school. Many children can get a ride from their parent, or the parent organizes some sort of
carpool
or whatever. But we have a lot of children that their only way of getting to and from school, and sometimes their only meals, are what we provide at school. And so the answer is yes, we could, but I would advise that we don't, that we do transfer both ways. What would AM/PM time schedule be, and how will it affect the breakfast and lunch program? So we'll talk about that in the next section, Jamie. But really what we're looking at, just on a quick overview, is 8 to 11, 12 to 3 are the 2 sessions. At 11, as students leave, they will get a lunch and a breakfast. The lunch for that day, the breakfast for the next day. The 12 to 3 group, when they leave at 3 o'clock, they will get a lunch and a breakfast, both for the following day. So they will get up in the morning, they will have their breakfast. Then before they come to school at noon, they will have their lunch. And then when they leave the next day, they get their meals for the following day. We are trying to avoid having eating happening at the school site, because under the reg, we cannot have them in the multipurpose room. So they would have to eat in the classroom, but because we only have 3 hours of instruction, if you give them a half an hour to eat, now you lower the number. And plus it's impossible to get all that cleaned up. So that's the way we're gonna do the lunch and breakfast program. It will stay free for all until December 31st. After that, unless the government changes what they've done so far, then it goes back to, if you qualify for free or reduced, then you would stay on free or reduced. If you don't, then you would start paying for the lunches. At that point, if we're still on a hybrid model, then we would ask, do you want a lunch or not, if you're paying for it? And if you don't, then the student wouldn't take one home. We'd go back to a system like that. In the meantime, because everybody's free or reduced, we're not getting parents to fill out the form, the lunch form to qualify. You need to do that now so that there's no backlog when it comes up in December and you can just roll into continuing to get it free. Not to mention that some of our funding through the federal government is provided through our free and reduced lunch count. And right now, our count is quite low compared to our normal count. And it's really because parents are saying, why do I need to fill that out? I'm getting it free anyways. It will not last forever, so please fill it out. And plus it helps all of the money that comes in, just so you know, is all the money that comes in Title I, that's all about free and reduced, goes directly to the school sites. It does not stay at the district. So it is to help them purchase all of the items they need every day for the students that go there. And that's my pitch to fill out before. Okay, so Stephanie, you're welcome. Alyssa, what are the projected time slots for AM/PM? I think I just answered that.
Sherry answered it on the chat too, 8-11 and 12-3. I know this is difficult too, because we're doing it in two sections, the waiver and then the reopening plan, but some of these questions will be answered in the reopening plan. So both of you asked estimated schedules for AM PM. How would you determine who gets AM versus PM? So that's a great question. How do we determine that? The way that we're going to determine that is we're going to try and keep families together. We have to look at scheduling at the middle school makes a big difference, because how they stay in cohorts. So if you have an older brother that needs to be in the PM for whatever reason, then we would make sure that the younger one was also in the PM, and so on and so forth. We are not able to take people asking for, can I have AM or can I have PM, because we will not be able to oblige all of those requests. It just won't happen, because we know that most people will ask for AM. If you really want to be on PM, let the principal know, because that would be helpful for us. But also we're going to look at how special ed plays into that role, and then transportation. So for example, we do not want to send the bus to and from Smartsville, which is a long drive, twice. So all the students out at Smartsville will be on one session, so that we only have to take the bus out there one time. So that's kind of how we're doing it. And then we're going to work with the teachers. So for example, we have a teacher at Lone Tree that has a 3-4 combination, and she's already made it clear that she would like to have her third grade in one of the sessions and her fourth grade in the other session. Makes total sense. So that's what we would do in that particular situation. The only time that may not work, I don't think we have any issues like that this year, but sometimes we have combo classes that have 19 first graders and 4 second graders. That would be a problem to bring them all at one time. But I think right now we're pretty evenly divided in our combos. We don't have a lot of combos, but the ones that we do, I believe that Melissa Jensen also has a combo, and I think she wants to do the same thing and split her combo by having it AM PM. So the teacher input will play a role in a lot of that.
I have 5 combos at Lone Tree and Charter, and that's how we're doing it, is by grade level.
Thank you. So, and then another teacher responded to the survey that they would like to be asked by the principal who should go where, because they have already connected with the kids and they know which ones they think should go together, not necessarily which ones are AM and which ones are PM, but togetherness. So the principals will also work with the staff to make that happen. Sherry has been working like crazy to connect. You don't know how difficult it is to connect families, because not only do we have families that are Wheatland L and Bear River, or Bear River and Bear River, or Wheatland L and Wheatland L, but Lone Tree and Bear River. I don't think we have any Lone Tree, Wheatland L, and Bear River, but we could. And then the other piece of it is that when you make those connections, not all of them have the same last name, right? So you're trying to connect by address and by parent name and so on and so forth. So Sherry's been working on that, and giving an Excel spreadsheet to all of the administrators to look at families being on the same program. So let's see, how does it work if you have a child with a mild or moderate asthma and the parent has severe asthma, and the parent can provide a doctor's note for themselves affect their child receiving independent study? If you have a significant health issue that would determine that you should stay on independent study, we will make sure that we get you on independent study, because we do not want to send you or your child back to an environment in which you're not comfortable coming back to. Especially if you provide us a doctor's note, then we will definitely make sure it happens. That's not a problem. Any other questions regarding the waiver process? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to turn it back over to the board, and then we can move on to the next section.
Okay, so any questions from the board? Do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion that we move ahead on this waiver process as quickly as we can.
I second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Does Rhonda have?
Does Rhonda, I didn't hear Rhonda.
Aye.
She said, okay. Okay, motion carried. Okay, so now we're gonna go to 3.2A, the reopening plan.
Okay, so I'm not gonna go through every bit of the reopening plan because a lot of it is also in the waiver plan, but I'll ask Chad to put up the reopening plan so everybody can see it. That's it?
Well, no, I don't have it shared yet. Hang on.
Okay. Okay, Jody, can you see it? Thank you. All right, so we just start off with a general letter to parents about what the reopening plan looks like. So I'm not gonna read that. It just basically talks about we're in this environment in which things change often and that we're trying, you know, it's a very trying circumstance for all of us, including the parents and the students. And we really wanna get students back and are ultimately, we want to eventually get our students back 5 days a week, full days, but we need to do it in a safe manner. So that's kind of what this letter says. So moving on to the next piece. So really, this is the nuts and bolts of it. So I kind of want to go through this in a manner in which people can understand it. So in our reopening model, we are looking at an AM/PM model. What that will look like is all students will remain on a short distance learning day on Monday. So every Monday, students will still be home. They will have a 1 hour-ish, could be a little less for TK, could be a little more, a 1 hour-ish discussion with their teacher on Zoom, giving some assignments for the day, whatever they choose to do on a Monday. The remainder of the day on Monday, the students would be doing independent work unless they've been invited into an intervention group that the teacher is set up, and it's optional. It is scheduled by the classroom teacher as needed. So you may get invited or an email saying, hey, we would like your child to be on an intervention today to work on spelling words, whatever. And then they would join in. The rest of the students would be doing independent work the remainder of the day. Then the rest of the day for students is independent work. For teachers, it's all of the things that they have to do to make sure they're providing the best education they can for your children. And so what they will be doing, that's the time in which they'll be grading, planning, working individually with students, making phone calls to parents, returning emails. I'm not going to name everything that they do because the list would be long. And that gives them the opportunity to do all that. One of the things that is required right now during this COVID is what's called an engagement log. And so teachers have to log every day the engagement of students. And that will be audited at the end of the year by the state of California to make sure that we have engaged or attempted to engage with all students 180 days out of the year. There is no requirement under the current guidelines on number of minutes, but there is a requirement on total number of days. So we have to have 5 days a week of some engagement. So that would be the 1 hour on Mondays, and then all of the interventions and any and engagement can be the teacher assigns the student a video and they have to then fill out something related to that video and turn it in on their Google or turn it in on Tuesday. And then they get credit for that assignment. Plus they get marked as being engaged on Monday. So those are the things that teachers are having to do. And that engagement log is something that's totally related to COVID. And it takes a lot of time for them to do it. So that's another thing that they'll be doing on Mondays. Then Tuesday through Thursday, what will happen in the TK5 environment is that students will be split in half-ish, but half-ish, because it could be 13, 11. It just depends on the split. Some of them will come AM, and they will come from 8 to 11, and then they will go home at 11. with lunch and breakfast in hand. And then the other group comes in at 12 and they leave at 3 with lunch and breakfast in hand. And then the remainder of the day, so they're in class for 3 hours. The remainder of the day that they are at home will be independent learning for students using teacher-driven assignments. So for example, if I'm an AM child in a TK classroom and I'm there from 8 to 11, there may be very little teacher-driven assignment for me to do when I get home because I'm TK. If I'm a fifth grade student, then I may have an hour's worth of work to do when I get home. It's all driven by what the assignments are based on the teacher's expectations in that classroom. And then the reverse is if you have your instruction from 12 to 3, then in the morning, assuming the next day in the morning, you're working on the assignments that were given you from 12 to 3 on the day before. So that's a TK through fifth grade plan. Now the sixth through eighth grade, and again, that is not part of the waiver, but it is part of the red tier. So we'll talk about it anyways, because it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when it happens. So we have the same kind of model in a sense that Monday is that day where the homeroom teacher will be checking in with their assigned homeroom students from 8 to 9 in the morning. It could be 8 to 8:45. It could be 8 to 9:30, depending on the day. That's driven by the teacher. They will meet with their homeroom teacher to talk about things that are happening. Then the intervention schedule, again, not set up by the district, not set up by the school site, set up by the teacher on the needs for intervention. You may or may not be involved in that, depending on how the child is doing in the classroom. And then the rest of the day for the student is independent learning from assignments that the teachers have given, and it gives them time to get those assignments done. The teachers will then be doing all of their things again. So very similar to the TK through 5. The Tuesday through Friday AM PM schedule is a little different in the middle school level. So if I'm an AM student, what's going to happen is I'm going to come to school from 8 to 11. During that 3 hour period, I'm going to get my math class, my social science class, and my science class. So those three are going to happen. Now, if I'm a PM student, I'm going to get the same classes from the same teachers from 12 to 3. Okay, so that's what's happening on campus. Then when the students go home so they're there from 8 to 11, they go home at 12 o'clock from 12 to 3, now they have distance learning. The distance learning classes are language arts, PE, and their elective. So there is, this is a kind of a half day of in-class and a half day of distance learning. A teacher's day looks like, if you're a math teacher, you're there from 8, you're teaching from 8 to 11 and then teaching again from 12 to 3, but you have no distance learning responsibilities except on the Monday when you're their homeroom teacher. If you're a language arts, PE, or elective teacher, then you will not be teaching students in person. You will be teaching them through distance learning for the 3 hours, and you will be all distance learning, and there'll be no responsibilities in the classroom themselves for the individual teaching. The only way that we can work through a schedule for 6 classes is to break it up that way so that it's half and half. Otherwise, you're going to end up not getting a subject, or you're going to end up only coming to school a couple days a week. This has students coming 4 days a week for 3 hours. So it gets, let's use math for example, they get 4 days of math. And the question, well, what about an AB model? An AB model means they get 2 days of math. And then because with an AB model, B students would have to get distance learning on the A days, which would be able to be provided by their homeroom teacher. So they would end up with 3 days of distance learning, 2 days of schooling on an A model or a B model, but the distance learning days are not going to be subject specific. They're going to be just homeroom teachers kind of checking in and seeing what they need help with. So the AM/PM model works in a way that we believe is best for students. In my opinion, and there's a lot of opinions out there, it's nice for a teacher to not have to worry about doing distance learning and in-class learning. It gives them the opportunity to do, if they're math, social science, or science, they get to do in class. If they're language arts, PE, or elective, they're doing it distance learning. And why did we pick those subject matters? I will tell you that language arts does lend itself a little better to distance learning. So that I think that is one of the reasons PE can be done individualized. And the elective, you know, we toyed back and forth about an elective being on campus, but it just made more sense to have our cores as much as we could in class. So math, social science, and science were chosen to be the ones on.
I was thinking, I just looked at Regine because I know we talked about the elective being an important part of, you know, that's why kids like to go to school. We talked about being able to bring small groups in, you know, on Mondays for, you know, interventions and that kind of stuff, or doing it on Zoom. Could maybe, if they're doing a project, bring in small groups, let's say for woodshop or whatever, would that be a possibility, or would that just be too much?
So I think the only thing we have to be cautious of, that's a great question. And one of the things, we are not going to mandate that a teacher do an intervention on Zoom or in the classroom on a Monday. If a kindergarten teacher wanted to bring in five kids for an intervention instead of doing it on Zoom, we certainly would allow that to happen as long as those five were in the same cohort. The problem with electives is that you could potentially end up cross cohorting kids.
Okay.
So it would be more difficult to do it that way. But again, I think the teachers will be able to use some of their expertise to figure out how to make all of those things work. And yes, I think that electives can be a draw to bring students back. But I think at this point, students are chomping to come back no matter what. And the elective can't, it is something. Although it would be nicer to have woodshop and ag in the rooms, but do you sacrifice science or social science or math for that? And the answer right now is has to be no. The cores have to come first.
And I see the high school is doing like their woodshop online, and they have to make projects and, you know, get help with friends, just because I know Rich is a woodworker, and so a lot of parents have come to him and say, can you help, you know, my kids? So they are doing projects and learning, you know, stuff online and safety things. And I don't think they're getting probably as much hands-on, but I'm sure with our great group of teachers, they're gonna, you know, even if it was go out and, or even pick up, you know, your flowers for, you know, when they order the flowers, you could do an online Zoom of putting them together for that. So I'm
sure. They'll figure out how to do that. I can tell you that I've seen some of the packets that go home for like woodshop, and they're sending home blocks of wood and tools and this and that. And so kids are doing that at home.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. So moving on to the next page is just reiterating that we do have the home-based independent study program available pending space availability. So that would be available for those who do not want to send their children back, or in the case of the one comment, if their child has a specific illness that will not allow them to be around other students, we would definitely accommodate that. And then you've seen this page from the waiver, so we can move on to the next page. So then I'm not going to go through all these again, but here's what to expect: 4 days a week of campus instruction, 1 day a week, 1 hour of distance learning for TK through five. Again, I don't think I put it in there, and I probably need to put a bullet point in there that middle school will have 4 days of campus instruction and 4 days of regular distance learning, and then 1 day on a Monday of 1 hour distance learning. So there, that is a little different that I need to add that bullet. And then it just talks about all the spacing and all the things we've already talked about, arranging seats, transportation, so on and so forth. I put in here, just because I keep it going that way, our district office is open from 7 to 4. The school offices, they have in the past have been open from 7:30 to 4 during the distance learning. It's 7 to 3:30, and we've left it that way because students are going to be out at 3 o'clock. So this should give them time afterwards. And really the bulk of making sure everything's up and running happens in the morning. So being there at 7. And then we talk about class assignments. Moving on. Food service. So I kind of explained this. AM students will walk out at 11 with a lunch in hand, and they will eat the lunch when they get home, assuming that's what they want to do. And that they'll also be given a breakfast, which is for the next day. And then PM students will walk out at 3 with a lunch and a breakfast for the next day. What that typically means is that nothing will be hot, right? If they have pizza, you will get a frozen piece of pizza that you take home and put in the microwave or however you're going to cook it. And the milk, if you are getting milk for breakfast, don't go home and leave it in your car for 3 hours because it will go sour. Put it right in your refrigerator and have it ready for the next day. So that's what we're doing for food service. And I will have to work with our food service crew about their hours, because none of them currently work till 3 o'clock when we would need to have people there to pass out. So we'll have to work through those processes. We also have other staff members on campus at that time that may be able to work through that. Our after school program currently will not be functioning in our hybrid model because there's no way to make that work in a cohort type situation. So no after school program until we're back to some regularity. I talk in here about social emotional needs, that we have counselors and psychologists available, a nurse available, and resources would be provided to the students and the parents if need be. One of the things that we know with students being out of school is that the distance learning can do a lot for some of the education pieces, but the social emotional piece is very difficult if they're not getting interaction with others. So that's in there. Next page, please. Communication, arrival and departure. Again, we've talked about all these. Daily instruction protocols. Again, masks, shields, desk shields will be on all desks. Face coverings, all of those things are in here. Next page. And all these bulleted items, I'm not going to go ahead and read them. This will be available, assuming the board approves it, it will be available on our website tomorrow. It's very similar to some of this, all these bullets are very similar to our last 5 or 6 reopening plans, because some of those have not changed. We do have hand sanitizers in all the classrooms. We do have cleaning and disinfecting. We will not allow the drinking fountains to be open, but the bottle fillers will be open. We do have the disinfecting foggers. Soap and paper towels in our bathrooms will be checked on a regular basis. We do not have sinks in every classroom. We do in most of the elementary school classrooms, but in the middle school, we do not. But we do have hand sanitizer available, and then classroom furniture and so on and so forth. We do ask that, in a normal year, we would go around and tell teachers to close the door and close the windows because the air conditioner is running. But now during COVID, we're being told by the health department to open your windows and open your doors as much as practical and if weather permits. I do have some concerns with wide open doors for security reasons, as well as people walking in that aren't in that cohort. So I would say that most likely we'll keep the doors closed, but the windows potentially open. But with the new ionizers that we're installing, we should not have an issue. And we are the only district in this area that's doing that. So it will be a proud moment when they all get put on.
Well, and if we have extra staff, we could have them kind of patrolling too, as well as
Yeah. So, yeah, and we, I mean, it's good. A lot of that stuff will be similar to the way, I mean, we still have our yard duty staff that are not going to be providing yard duty services, but they can help in food service, or they can help patrol the grounds, or they can help bring a student up to the office. There's all kinds of things that our other staff can do. I do want to call your attention to the fact that we're not going to allow outside food for birthdays or other celebrations. However, if your child's in the care program or something like that, and they have a specialized diet, we certainly want them to be able to bring their specialized food.
Does that include like sharing, bringing all that stuff?
Yeah, there won't be sharing time and those types of things currently. No field trips, except for virtual field trips, that type of thing. There will not be any volunteering in the classrooms by parents at this time. Parents can drop items off at the office if they need to drop something off, and then the office will take care of it. We do not want visitors on campus because that really messes with the cohorts, and we just can't control that. So at this particular time, we're asking for no visitors or volunteers unless you've been invited by the teacher or the staff member to come in for a specific reason, and typically the rest of the students would not be there at that time.
I'm gonna ask another question.
Sure.
So if like we have a staff member, obviously she's, cleared of all that, she wants her time's up, she does volunteer for several different teachers, so that obviously would be fall under a different category, I would assume she would.
Well, employees are allowed to be there. However, I think the one thing that will have to be everything's going to be individualized, but the one thing I'll need to look at in a situation like that is, are we mixing cohorts? Because what we don't want to do is have a staff member who's going to multiple places throughout the day be the one who gets infected at some point with COVID, and now I've got three different classrooms that staff member was in that could potentially cause us to quarantine three classrooms. So that would be the we just have to look at it on an individual basis about what that looks like from a standpoint of where they go. Next page, please. So outside time for students. Again, during the AM/PM model, there's not going to be a lot of outside time. However, if a teacher is, students got the wiggles and they need a break, and the teacher wants to walk them around the building or take them out for a breath of fresh air, that's the teacher's prerogative to do that. We're just not going to have organized, standardized recesses. Kids can't play on the equipment currently under the guidelines. They can't share basketballs and so on and so forth. So there's really not a lot for them to do outside. So they will most likely, teachers will organize some sort of a break either inside or outside for the students for a short period of time to in between, curriculum or whatever. But we're not having PE because that's on distance learning, and we will not have organized recesses or a lunch period because they're taking the lunches home. So what happens when a student becomes sick? We will follow the guidelines. It really depends on the protocols at the time. If a student becomes sick with COVID or they come in with symptoms of COVID, they will be put into an isolation room that we have in the office, and then the parent will be called, and it will be recommended that the child be tested. And if they choose not to test the child will then have to self-quarantine for 14 days. Our tracers would then call to find out who the child has been around, look and see if those people have symptoms, and potentially quarantine them as well. That's why it's really important for people to get tested. But we understand some just choose not to do that, even though they are recommended to. Yeah, I don't know that I need to talk a whole lot more about that. You can read about it. We are following the guidelines of the health office. Parents will be contacted, required to pick up the student. The contact tracers will do their jobs. And I do want to say that I want to reiterate, close contact in the eyes of the health department, close contact is within 6 feet for more than 15 minutes without a mask. It is not within 6 feet for 15 minutes with a mask. Okay, so you do not need to report that you've been in close contact with somebody if you are following the guidelines of staying masked up. And it's very unlikely that you're going to be within 6 feet of somebody for 15 or more minutes in the program that we've got currently set up. So we shouldn't have a lot of issues with that, but as I was talking to some teachers today, it would be foolish of us to say we won't have any issues, right? I mean, Rockland's been open for 2 weeks now, and they've already had a teacher and I think three high school students. None at the elementaries that I'm aware of, so that's better, but they've had three at Whitney High School along with a staff member. But they have not had to quarantine any of the classes at this point. All right, so moving on. What about transportation? So I did talk about that. We will have hand sanitizers on all buses. Temperatures will be taken as they get on. No student will be left. I'm going to keep repeating that. No student will be left on the side of the road. If a student has a temperature and their parent is there, we will ask the parent to take their child home. If the student has a temperature and the parent is not there, they will be put into a specific group of seats where they will stay there until we get to the school, and then they will be escorted somehow to the office when somebody comes and gets them, when the bus driver takes them to the office. A temperature will be taken again when they get there, because it could be that the temperature was wrong or, varied other things, and then it will go from there. If the child is sick, we will send them home, call the parent, and so on and so forth. I will reiterate for any parents that are on this board meeting Zoom, if we call you to pick up your child, that means pick up your child. It does not mean I'll be there in 2.5 hours, because the reality of it is we have one quarantine room, and if we have more than one child exhibiting symptoms of COVID, we do not want to buckle them together in one room. So then we have to find other places. And so it is imperative that when a parent is called, that they come pick up their child immediately. Moving on. So I've already talked about face coverings. All students that ride the bus will have to wear them. It does not matter if they're TK first or second. If they're going to choose to ride the bus, they will have to wear the face mask. The only exception to that will be our special ed students that have sensory issues, and they may not even be on the regular bus. They might be on a special ed bus, or a student who has a doctor's note that says that they cannot wear it. I would encourage you to, if your child cannot wear a facial covering, to figure out a different way to get to and from school than the bus, because that is probably the area in which we have the least control over social distancing. So we want to make sure that everybody understands, if they're signing up to get on the bus, that their child will have to wear a face mask and will likely be sitting within 3 feet or so of another student, maybe even 2 feet. We will not put three in a bus in a seat, but we will have to put two in a seat at times, depending again on how many students actually ride the bus, which we won't know until we reopen. So moving on down, I will tell you, our preschools are, the kids are going every day and they are not wearing masks, but the staff is. There may be two or three preschoolers that wear masks, but for the most part, they're not, but all of our staff is. And then I've already talked about promoting hygiene practices, ventilation, cleaning, and disinfecting. So I'm going to pass that up. And that's it. So that is the reopening plan. And I'm sure that most of the questions come around the schedule, but I'm going to ask the board if they have any questions before we go to chat.
Obviously, we've talked about it.
Okay. Nothing? Okay, so let me come over for the chat. I got to see where we left off.
think we did that one, did that one.
Send it from the bottom.
Yeah, that one.
You asked parents to reach out to the, okay, so we will ask parents, yes. When this gets posted, we're gonna put some out there. Peter will have to do some follow-up with the HBIS students to find out if they're planning on staying on there or not, and seeing how many spots that'll open up. And then we will ask parents to sign up on a list, and we will see how many will want to go to HBIS instead of being on campus. So we can do that. Not sure if this is a timely question. How does the AMPM affect the kids now on the campus and the care programs? What about volunteering by staff? So again, volunteering by staff, that's an individualized question that you need to talk to me about, so that we can see how that works. The care program will look very similar to what it looks like now, with some changes that Tara is working on. And it will be, obviously, if your child is, so if you're a teacher at Wheatland Elementary School and your child is goes to school at Bear River, then your child will no longer be in the Wheatland Elementary School care program. They will move over to the Bear River care program at least Tuesday through Friday. They could come back into yours on Monday if that's what you so choose, or they could potentially be in your room on Monday because you're just doing the 1 hour and all the other things that you have to do. I'm not sure that that depends on your children. When my kids were young, no, they would have gone to care because I wouldn't have been able to get my job done. So there'll be more information coming out about care in the near future once we move forward. This solution for our children, is that based solely out of the survey, or will there be another option to choose AMPM? So we will be assigning students to AMPM based on all the things I talked about earlier. If you have a, we are not able to accommodate everybody's request. So if you put in there, I like AMPM and I want AM, we may be able to accommodate you, but I can't guarantee that we can accommodate you. So will another option to choose? So I'm not sure if I answered that question, Chris. If you're on here and you want to ask it verbally, or if I did answer it, you can just put it in the chat. Thank you, I answered it. I don't know if you meant another option other than AMPM, because that is the option that I'm recommending to the board, is AMPM. There will not be an AB model option unless the board chooses to go in that direction. But currently, that is not the only option, is AMPM or potentially being on home-based instructional program. In the event the child is symptomatic or tests positive, are these absences excused or unexcused? So, and the staff children able to Zoom or do independent study during quarantine? What the plan is no child will get sick. However, if they do get sick, then they will be given work, packet work of some sort, which we have yet to be able to, well, I mean, we'll determine that before we get back. They will get packet work. They will have that packet work at home. They will be able to Zoom in on Mondays with every other child. But if they're an elementary school child, there will not be Zoom available with the teachers unless the teacher chooses to do an individual Zoom in the afternoon with your child. There will not be Zooms or distance learning available. It will just be work in the packet. And as long as you are completing the packet work, then you would not have an attendance issue or an engagement issue. So hopefully that answers the question. Okay, so it looks like I did get Chris's answer or question answered correctly. Alyssa, I think hopefully that answers your question. When should TK students register? I would reach out to the school. Well, I've got Jody and Peter on here. I think the sooner you know that you want to bring your child into TK, the better. We need to know that immediately once the decision is made, which should be made tonight, knowing that we will not start for a minimum of 2.5 weeks.
I would love to know those enrollees as soon as possible. I'm sure Peter would too, because the sooner we can arrange them in a class and get things set up would be great.
So in the event that there is a cohort classroom that has a positive COVID result and those children are not able to come to class, will that require siblings to stay home as well? The answer is no, as long as your child is not the one that has COVID. Okay, so if your child's in a classroom and it's been determined that they were in close contact, again, I think this is a far stretch, because if they follow the mask rules and they stay in their desks, they're gonna be more than 6 feet away, there's likelihood that they would not have to be quarantined. However, if it is determined that your child is not the one who has COVID but does have to be quarantined, the brother and sister is called a secondary, and secondaries do not have to quarantine or do not have to stay home from school. How are speech services addressed in this model? Speech will remain on as a Zoom currently, because there's no way to orchestrate all of that on an AM PM. So our speech therapists will continue to schedule their students for Zoom speech therapy as they are currently doing. The speech therapist should be working with the administrators on scheduling. So if you already had speech therapy scheduled for the morning, then we would want your child to be an afternoon child so it didn't interrupt speech. So we're working on that as well. But that's how speech is going to be taken care of currently. So my child is late and runs to the bus stop. His temperature is elevated. Your non-medically trained bus drivers. I don't know why we have to have such a negative tone in our questions, but our bus drivers do have CPR. They are first aid trained. They will take their temperature. As I said, if the child has a temperature and they are put in a spot on the bus and they get to school, they've now had time to cool off, and they take a temperature again 10 to 15 minutes later, they will not have to be sent home. What would a current TKK class at Wheatland L change if more TK register to enroll? Would Wheatland L open a new class? Okay, so if we got an influx of TK kids, we would have to definitely look at that. I don't expect that to happen. It may be, so, the reality of it is that there's the potential for children to shift from the current teacher that they have to a different teacher. It's unlikely, but there is that potential to make that happen. But isolate them with possibly ill children. No, they would be in their own seat. They would not be, we would not put all of the temperature children together. It's very unlikely that we're even gonna have children with temperatures, that the parents do what they're supposed to do and check their temperatures before they come in. But if they do, they will be isolated into their own seat, not with other ill children. And also back to that same question, if you're not comfortable putting your child on the bus, you certainly can bring them yourself, or you can have some other neighbor bring them. The child, I don't know, if you're close enough, they can walk. Those are all options. We are not forcing transportation on anybody. In fact, the district is not required by law to provide transportation. We choose to provide transportation because we have students that live way out by the lake and way out in Smartsville. There's no way they can get to school other than that. So there is the potential that the parent could bring the child. If the child has allergies which causes a runny nose, will they be sent home because that's a symptom, or only if they have a temp? So this is the ongoing, very difficult question. We are running into cold and flu season, and the symptoms for COVID are very similar to cold and flu. If it's a runny nose, if you know as a parent that your child has a runny nose, it may be a good idea to keep them home until they don't have a runny nose. But if you do send them and they have a runny nose and they don't have a temperature, I would ask our nurse to take a look and see what she determines. She is trained to do that. So that would, and then she would make the decision on whether or not the child needs to go home. So here's an example. We have students currently that run a low, I guess you would call it a low grade fever anyways. They're constantly at 100, okay? So we need to know that if that's your child, because when they come in to get their temperature taken, if that's their normal temperature, then they don't have a temperature, right? But if it's not their normal temperature, then we would want to know that. So if you have a child who runs a higher than average temperature, and there are many children that do that, please let us know that ahead of time so that we don't run into an issue of sending it home when it's just their normal temp. The other thing too is that the way the symptoms from COVID work is it's something that you don't have another explanation for. So for example, when the smoke was crazy in our town, people had sore throats and eyes watering and so on and so forth. Well, there's a good explanation for that because we have a lot of smoke in the air. So, or if you're somebody who gets migraines on a regular basis, just because you have a headache doesn't mean that you are potentially have COVID. So it is a very difficult thing, and we will try to err on the side of safety as the most, but understand that sometimes it's just gonna be very difficult to pick that out. If the runny nose goes away in 24 hours and you bring them back, you know, then that'll be fine. So it has been discussed as an option to hold off until January to bring kids back into the classroom and hope that the worst is behind us and we can open up as normal as possible. The hybrid models are very difficult for working parents, at least with distance learning arrangements can be made for the child to be somewhere each day, all day. Yeah, I understand that, but the reality of it is that we want the kids back in school. That's where they belong. That's the education that they need. A hybrid model isn't our first choice, but we believe educationally it's definitely better than a distance learning model. Every school in Placer County is going back to school or is back in school. Every school in Yuba County will be back. Waiting till January, hoping that this goes away, is we can't plan on hope. Unfortunately, we tried to do that at the beginning. Remember, it took us a while to really shut down because we kept saying, well, let's give it another week. And before we finally made the decision to close for the entire rest of the school year. I don't know what's going to happen with COVID. You know, I mean, the only information we all get is publicly from the news. I get some information from the health department on a regular basis. I meet with them every Monday. The expectation is that it's not going to go away and that a vaccine will probably not be available till the beginning of the year. And if you are not a essential worker, i.e. firemen, policemen, da, 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 you potentially can't even get the vaccine until late into 2021. And they are also saying that everybody should go get a flu shot because they're worried about having the flu and the COVID people all entering the hospitals at the same time. We are actually planning on holding a flu shot clinic here a drive-through clinic. We're looking at October 24th. Is that a Saturday? October 24th. It'll be a 3-hour. We have a we should have 100 doses available. So the first 100 that come through, we can get a flu shot. That's our plan. We're hoping to have confirmation on that, and then we will put something out to everybody.
On that too, Craig, getting kids back, the hybrid model is not our first choice. But I think not only educationally, we said it socially, emotionally. I watched a thing today because September is National Suicide Month, and their numbers are up so much from last year, and it's younger children, 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds that just have issues that aren't normally caught because they go to their friends for support, the people that they have around them. And I think that's a huge indicator right there that if we have to bring them back, at least we're bringing them back with they have somebody. It's not those four walls. And I think that part is just absolutely huge. So.
Well, and those of you that were on last week, our nurse read a lot of statistics about the need to bring students back to school outweigh the concerns about COVID based on the pediatric organizations and all of that. So it is important to get them back. Lisa, you asked a question last time about whether or not we would be sharing runs with the high school, and the answer to that currently is no, we're not planning on sharing runs with the high school. They won't even be on the same model as us, but I also talked to, and I don't know if Kathy is on here, but I talked to our director of transportation, and we would not need to do that if we only make one run out to Smartsville. We do not plan on only making one run out to the lake. We believe that we can do more than one run or AM and PM out to the lake area. So that is the plan. And hopefully I also answered your high school question. Yes, Stephanie, you're right. There's a lot of juggling and a lot of hardship. I truly believe that we are expecting our teachers to do more than they've ever had to do, our administrators to do more, our parents and our students to adapt to a very unusual environment. And although there's no perfect answer here, we are trying to do everything we can to do the best we can under these excruciating circumstances. So I agree, Stephanie, and hopefully you can find somebody to help you with. I know double working parents, it's just a difficult thing. Off topic slightly, will we be doing another blood drive? I don't know about that. I don't know what the parameters are right now with COVID and blood drives, Rochelle, so I can check on that. So it looks like the high school is doing a blood drive in October, so there you go. Give your blood to the high school and you'll be set. We didn't have one organized. We're really trying to organize not only a flu clinic, but also a shot clinic to be able to get shots for our entering students and the seventh grade, what's it called? TDAP. We're trying to get that, but the state's not being responsive. So it may be they say it and we have to do it a week later, but we will get notification out to everybody when that happens. Anything else? I'm going to give it one more minute, and then I'm going to toss it back to the board for their discussion and potential approval. I just know when I walk away, someone's going to write something, so I'm just holding on for 1 second.
That I can let you know if something comes up.
Okay. So, seeing nothing further, I will send this back
you got
to the
something.
Board. Oh, of course. See what I said? Okay. So, we're not going to get in a fight on chat, so I'm not even going to read that one. So, thank you. So, I'm tossing it back to the board at this point.
Okay.
Okay, do we have any questions? I know we discussed this in length for hours and hours, so. So do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion that we accept the reopen plan.
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Rhonda voted aye as well.
Opposed? Okay, motion carried.
Okay, so I think that's it, Kathy.
That's it. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you all for coming. Again, I will reiterate that my door is always open. My email, if you need questions answered, please let me know. Thank you, Renee. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much. We're going to go ahead and end the Zoom session now. And parents, expect this to be posted on the website tomorrow.
Thank you.